for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
It is, in fact, the Football Club of Buffalo show here on WBNY. I'm Nick Mandola from Pro Soccer Talk from NBC Sports, as well as FC Buffalo. And Ben Tsujimoto is here from the Buffalo News soccer blog. That's soccer.buffalonews.com. Lots of things to discuss today, including a few things I didn't tell Ben about until I tweeted that they were going to be on the show.
Ooh, but I saw it, I'm ready.
Oh, I'm sure you were ready. Mm-hmm. And a third thing, just now, just reading it right now, full story. Newcastle United confident Rafa Benitez will stay on despite going down to the championship.
Good. I like that.
Arsenal finishing second in the Premier League is very interesting to me, as they call it St. Totteringham's Day, whenever Arsenal finishes above Spurs, which remarkably has happened again after Newcastle beat them. And we'll also talk about Jozy Altidore's injury and what that means for Newcastle. We'll begin, however,
what it means for Newcastle.
I'm sorry.
It might mean something.
It could, yes. He used to play for Sunderland. No, what it means for the United States national team, and well, maybe a little bit for Toronto FC, where it may be an even bigger hit. But we begin opening day for FC Buffalo is a 1-0 loss for the Rochester River Dogs at All-High Stadium on Saturday evening. Not the world's most exciting game, to say the least, although the crowd of 1,100, honestly, I had a lot of great reviews on the crowd, and the players last night were talking very highly of it. We'll talk to a couple players on the team, but Ben, before we bring in one of them, Ian McGrath, who played 90 minutes at center back, just your opening thoughts on the match.
Yeah, it was a very, very difficult start to the season, and it's tough because there was the first 30 minutes of the match for FC Buffalo were very disconnected between the backs, the midfield, and the forwards. And Rochester was the team that had a little bit more poise on the ball, that was willing to go square and back rather than just lump it forward. And it got a little bit better for FC Buffalo. I thought some of the substitutes came on, changed the complexion of the game in a good way. But, you know, there were some scoring chances here or there, but I don't really think FC Buffalo tested Cameron Hogg, who he's the UBE backup keeper now. But
Veteran of the show,
a spearfisher, as I always like to say. But no, I don't think he was tested enough. And that's one thing that Ian McGrath of FC Buffalo said after the game is like, we got to, you know, create some more chances, get a little bit more creativity in the final third. And that's really what it's going to come down to. But fortunately, FC Buffalo have three or four guys who can make a difference in that area that are coming into camp soon. So
yeah, and tactically speaking, Ian was actually a part of that. We're going to bring him in. We'll bring him in right now. Ian McGrath goes to Evansville, played 90 minutes at center back, was involved in really my favorite subplot of the game, which was a very physical one-on-one battle with Isaac Kissy that really pervaded my viewing of the game. It seemed like every time I looked up, they were trying to get the ball to Isaac, and Ian was right on his back. Ian, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. I mean, let's talk about that. I know you and I actually spoke about it over tacos last night, but let's bring it to the radio. That was one heck of a battle. Is that something that you enjoy as a center back, or would you rather have some room to maneuver?
No, absolutely. I definitely enjoy the battle. You know, that's always the way I play. That's the way my dad taught me to play. And coming into it, I heard that, you know, he had a professional background. And so I was looking forward to playing with him and, you know, accepting the challenge and seeing what I could do with him and how to defend him and whatnot. So,
Ian, Ben Tsujimoto here. My question is, how tall are you? Standing next to you for an interview, you are a pretty tall dude, and I'm not sure, it's sometimes hard to judge if you're in the stands. Are you 6'4", 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah, I'm about 6'4", but yeah, every time I come home or go to a new place, everybody keeps telling me that I'm growing, so probably between 6'4 and 6'5", so.
Did you have a late growth spurt as a player, or were you shorter when you were younger, and just tell me about and how that affected where you played on the field, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely had a great late growth spurt. Didn't really get tall until sophomore, junior year of high school. And that definitely changed my game a little bit because I've always played in the middle. And, you know, when I hit that growth spurt, I had the confidence to you know, go in for 50-50 battles, and my aerial game got a lot better, and just overall confidence with, you know, challenging guys one-on-one was a lot better.
You're an interesting part of the game plan in noticing that as the game wore on, I don't know how long it was, maybe the final 20 minutes, the final 25 minutes, you started actively dribbling further up the field and were more involved in the attack. You had a couple of long-distance goals that were lighting up YouTube earlier this year as well. It's a tricky balance, but literally, so you were a huge part of the game at center back, and then did something shift in there? Did Coach Murphy have you do something different, or was that an impetus? Was that your own choice?
Yeah, I mean, that was just my own choice. You know, growing up, I've always played, you know, midfield or up top, so I have that knack to go forward and create chances and score goals. So, you know, it's kind of tough being back there, having that instinct. But, yeah, you know, I just saw some green space, and I thought we needed to add a little bit more variety to our attack. And so I just took some opportunities to see if we could get something going up top.
How unfamiliar of a role was playing center back? I know it seemed like it was sort of a makeshift back line in terms of who was available, but is this something that, you know, you've had to play some in the past, or is this just like, all right, Ian, play center back?
No, I've been tossed around everywhere. I played center back for a couple games during the fall season, and I played every game in the spring season as a center back. So I'm fairly used to it, and, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with the position, so it wasn't too difficult of a task for me to handle.
Brian Paredes, or Paredes, excuse me, who's going to be a guest later on in the show today. He was your center back partner on Saturday. How was that experience for you? Was it pretty easy to work together with him? Because it's important, you know, communication between center back partners.
Yeah, for sure. We got in around the same time, so we got a couple training sessions together, and I feel like we have a very similar style of play. You know, we like to keep the ball, you know, decent vision, good at passing. So, yeah, I thought it was pretty easy to play with him. He's a good center back. He's very smart. So, you know, didn't take a lot of work to start meshing with him and playing well together with him. So,
you guys get back to training this evening over at DUville. You know, what are some of the things you anticipate, besides obviously new players, that might be a little different about training this week? And tell us a little bit about your expectations for the first road trip going out to Cleveland this weekend.
Sure. Well, I think tonight at training we'll work a lot on, you know, attacking, especially in the middle third and the final third. I think we need to be a little more creative through the middle so that we can create chances up top. I think that's one big thing that we need to work on, and maybe just taking chances, even, you know, from outside the box, like I said yesterday or Saturday after the game, I didn't think we tested the keeper very much. So I think we could work a little bit on that. And I think overall, just for this week preparing for Saturday, I think we just need to work on, you know, getting the chemistry up, getting a little more familiar with how everyone plays and, you know, what our team's tendencies are. And I think the attitude just needs to be there. And, you know, once we get these couple practices under our belt, I think we'll be prepared for Saturday. So,
Ian, I know that you had a lot of good things to say about the crowd on Saturday night, but I'm interested in what your impressions have been so far of Buffalo, the city itself. I know Evansville is in Indiana is probably a lot different than Buffalo. I've never been to Evansville, so I can't really speak for it. But I'm just wondering about your impressions so far and maybe the 10 days or so you've been here.
Yeah, driving in, I thought it was awesome. There were a lot of cool scenes that I saw coming in. And I think it's a great city. It seems to have a lot of history. It seems to have a nice balance between, you know, some city life and just some, you know, some regular, normal life. And, you know, I've kind of been driving around lately, and I've, you know, I've seen a lot of cool places. So, you know, it's been definitely a cool experience. I've never been anywhere out here at all, so to come out here and, you know, drive around and explore a little bit was pretty awesome.
Well, I mentioned to you yesterday that, you know, I'm a big, and I know you're a White Sox fan, but I'm a big Cubs fan, and I'd gone out to Chicago a bunch, and I always thought of it as kind of a giant Buffalo, and you kind of agreed with that. What more can you tell us about I mean, are you a big Chicago sports fan? Is it something else you like about being back home, or just, you know, give us the scoop on that?
Yeah, well, obviously, Chicago's pretty rich in sports, so yeah, I do follow all the sports teams. Not the Bears so much, but yeah, it's a great city, and being so close to actual downtown Chicago is very nice. There's so much to do around there. A lot of times in the summer, we'll go to the beach, take the train, and just have a good time and explore down there. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, it is like a bigger version of Buffalo. So, it is nice to have that reminder while staying here.
Do you get rid of Jimmy Butler or do you keep Jimmy Butler?
That's a good question. I don't know. He's been a good player for us. So, I don't know. We'll see if we can spend our money properly, but we'll have to see.
Ian, I got one more question for you now that you mentioned, because I know you were at, you spent a lot of time in the Chicago Fire setup, and do you consider yourself a fan of the team, or is that difficult to do when you're part of the, you know, the setup?
Yeah, it is a little difficult. I was around it quite a bit. You know, we got tickets to the games and whatnot, and, you know, we'd always participate, but lately, they've, you know, kind of been at a decline. They haven't really got so much attention. I know back a couple of years ago when I was a little younger, a lot of people went to the games and the stadiums were full. But lately, it's, you know, not been the same. So hopefully, you know, we can get a couple more wins and, you know, try and get the stand back up to capacity and, you know, create a good environment for Chicago soccer.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us today, Ian. We look forward to seeing you play this weekend and on into the season. Great first game for you, despite the scoreline. And anything we should have asked you?
No, I think we covered everything.
All right, man. Sounds good. Ian McGrath from Evansville and obviously Chicago, Illinois, center back, center mid, and maybe even striker now. I mean, now that we hear about his background as the days go by for FC Buffalo. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you, guys.
So, Ben, I thought, and again, not just to give a high five before we move into other parts of the soccer world for parts of our show, I really did enjoy that battle between him and Kissy. And I thought, for the most part, you could address, you know, him, Brian Paredes, and even the adventurous Johnny Macbeth as playing very, very physical, very quick decisions out of the back. And you know, I think there's some promise there considering how many of those guys were playing out of position.
Yeah.
Well, not out of position, but out of their primary position. Not Klinsmann out of position, quote unquote.
I thought those three were some of the best players on the pitch for FC Buffalo, and they were forced to absorb a lot of pressure. Rochester's three center mids are their best players. I think Gianluca Cuomo, Stefano Stamoulakatos, and Rafael Godoy are, you know, they all bring something different to the table, which makes them kind of difficult to mark, you know, and they're, Godoy's mobile, Stamoulakatos is strong, and Cuomo's also a pretty big dude. And then dealing with Kissy on top of that, Kissy, the former Rochester Rhino, was once their offensive player of the year, is just broad-shouldered, your basically typical target striker, or the ideal target striker in terms of build. So that's tough for a guy. Brian Paredes was, I don't know, he probably concedes 5 inches and 55 pounds. Did very well, you know, putting his body into him, making it difficult for him to turn. And you're right, I think the center backs, both McGrath and Paredes, as well as Macbeth, who was very lively, you know, getting up and back and taking the set pieces, they weren't all perfect, obviously, but there were some that were very good. You know, he had a couple dangerous corner kicks late, and it's good to see someone like that who's very versatile, because you don't really necessarily know where he'll fit in the future. You know, whether is he a mid? Does he play really high up the pitch? Who knows? But it's a good first showing for him.
Well, what'll be interesting to me is seeing what Coach Murphy does over the course of this week, because you've got a really talented team, and in some cases, guys who didn't even get into the match. But now you've got a guy coming into town, well, already in town, in David Acuna Camacho, who played 3 years at holding mid at Monmouth, a very good program, before dropping back to center back, and all he did there was win conference player of the year, or defensive player
of the year.
Keith Trout is in town. He'll be probably arriving right now, may even hear this on the radio, from Albany. Big, strong kid, capable of playing fullback and center back, was first team as a defender at Albany. So, you know, how do you decide there? With Paredes, or excuse me, Paredes. I just learned that we got to say it right. Brian Paredes and Ian McGrath, both capable of obviously playing center mid as well. That's how we recruited them. And then they both played their springs at center back. So there's a wealth of decisions there. We've got Sam Biles coming in from from the Arsenal setup, who was a defensive center mid and a right back at Arsenal. But Jim Orvis, who plays outside as well. And then some attacking guys as well who will be in the fold, and Philip Person and Nicky Watson. So it could be a dramatically different team going to Cleveland. It could be the same team. Who knows? But it'll be exciting to see. And I think the number one thing, I'm not interested in making excuses. I mean, I was a miserable man after the game. I don't handle losing very well. But I think you're looking at a team that started training together on Monday. Some of those guys didn't get until Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And the River Dogs played three games before that. They played St. Bonaventure, they played GCC, and they played the Amherst Sharpshooters. So I think that's a real challenge. And in previous years, our team setup has allowed us to have a couple weeks of training before the first game, and it just wasn't that way this year. So, I expect a lot better. But you start to look at it as, right, you look at our schedule when it came out, and you're like, home against an expansion team. Okay, yeah. We go on the road to Cleveland. All right, and then back home to Erie, and all of a sudden it's you realize it is definitely an every game matters setup, and that first one on the road is going to be a challenge with Cleveland. Although fortunately for us, I think they'll be coming off three games in 7 days, and it'll be their fourth inside of 10.
They had a very good result though against Indy 11. I was surprised to see that because I thought Indy 11 NPSL was going to, maybe win that game comfortably. And
yeah, it was in Cleveland, right?
Yeah.
I didn't get to watch it, obviously, but the thing that I think benefited both those teams and left all cards kind of on the table is that they both played midweek in the Open Cup.
Yeah.
And so, that'll be real interesting. And, of course, still some time before we'll see Erie and FC Indiana on the schedule. So,
one more thing to interject. While the River Dogs did play very well and did what they needed to do on Saturday, I think that they're not going to have nearly the amount of players who are coming in now compared to what you guys
I think they have. Pretty much had their team. I know Matt Tucker didn't start out of George Mason, but you're right. And that's not an excuse, but this was, I think that's pretty much their best. You saw their best game on Saturday.
And I think you'll see a different kind of matchup when you guys play Rochester. I think it's sometime later in June.
Yeah, that definitely the league game is later in June, but there may be something else cooking. So
there's a teaser for you guys that I am completely oblivious about.
Yeah, so. I left a bit of a baited on the air there, so I wanted to follow
can
up.
Make the noise again.
We'll see. We'll see what's cooking there, Ben. After 20 minutes of the old NPSL banter, I did want to bounce into this. What did you make of that final day in the Premier League, Arsenal rising above Spurs to claim second?
You know, I didn't know that it was Arsenal's highest finish since 2005.
Yeah.
Which, kind of took me aback and made me think about it a little bit. And
Maybe made you think a little bit more about how we view Arsene Wenger.
True. Agreed. Yeah, agreed. I think it's more of an indictment on how Tottenham finished than it is on Arsenal surging forward. Someone I read today, I think it might have been John Bruin, was like, this might be the worst team to finish second in the EPL since, I think, 87, 88 or something like that, when Manchester United finished second. So that is pretty harsh. I don't know if that's true. I think Arsenal is a good team that lost a couple of very important pieces early on.
Very much so.
You saw Sandy Cazorla come back and play a little bit on Sunday. You saw Jack Wilshere suddenly working himself back into the England picture, which I was a little surprised about. But I think when Jack Wilshere is healthy, he's a very, very useful player. He's just never healthy. So for Arsenal, so much talent, but I don't think you can be that happy with second place in a year when Leicester City wins it all.
Yeah, and I had a hard time with that today on NBC Sports Pro Soccer Talk. I had to kind of grade the managers out was one of my duties. It just went up at 5:00, so you probably haven't seen it because you're on the radio.
That would be weird if I had.
But I had trouble grading Wenger. I mean, they finished in second place, which is obviously a very good thing. But this was a season for them to take hold of it. And mainly, I don't think he failed as a tactician as much as I think he failed in the transfer market. Mm-hmm. There was a big stink he made about Anthony Martial and how much Manchester United paid for them, him. And it was a lot of money for a 19-year-old, or was he even 18 when the purchase was made?
I think he was 18.
That said, he did literally, and I rolled my eyes when I saw the comparisons to Thierry Henry. But you really saw flashes of it.
Yeah.
He is a similar type of player. Obviously, he's got a lot of work to do to be the best striker of his decade.
My favorite part about Martial is that he really makes no facial expressions other than the one
where he
kind of leers at you.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he had a fantastic season as a prospect. And I think if he's spelling Olivier Giroud instead of, I mean, can we give up on Theo Walcott as a striker yet?
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Holy cow.
I've already given up on Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, too, as, you know,
much of anything.
A useful piece. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is funny. I think in some ways they're kept around because of the English influence. But
mm-hmm.
they, with another striker, I really think it does the trick for them. So I gave him a B-, and I didn't feel bad about it. How many times are you going to give a manager a B- when he doesn't finish it, when he finishes in second place? I didn't, you know?
I want to ask you about Giroud, because Giroud is another lightning rod. I think it's probably Wenger who's the biggest lightning rod, and then Giroud is the second one as far.
Sure.
Maybe lightning rod is not great, but whipping boy. I don't know if that's
that's close.
I feel like that's kind of harsh too. It feels weird to say aloud. But Giroud's beaten up, you know, and he's criticized because he's not necessarily clinical with his feet. He has stretches where he's very inconsistent. He's very good with his head, and I think he's good as a target striker. But he just whatever he's not doing is really making Arsenal fans pretty upset.
I think he has the misfortune of, I don't want to make a Tyrod Taylor comparison here.
Ooh. You know, Sammy Watkins broke his foot.
Maybe Thomas Vanek comparison. Yes, I do know that.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe a Thomas Vanek comparison in that he has the misfortune of being a very, very, very good player who isn't a great player.
Mm.
And when you're a team like Arsenal, with a reputation like Arsenal that's had so many fantastic attacking talents and has some in Mesut Ozil, et cetera, Ozil. But I think he is better than most Arsenal fans think, but worse than what they need. And I know that's a tricky kind of way to phrase it, but I think you understand what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
He's fine.
Yeah.
You like having him on your team. You like rolling him out there. You know, more often than Man City uses Wilfried Bony, but yeah, if that guy is coming off your bench or used in a game where your 4-5-1 absolutely demands a true target forward, how are you going to be upset about? Plus, he's so darn handsome, Ben.
That, Nick, I don't really care about.
Well, listen,
he has very well coiffed hair, though.
He does. He knows how to. He knows how to maintain his beard line as well. But
on a windy night at Stoke, his hair is not moving.
Yeah, he's gonna have some of those kind of curls that come out of place and go all the way across the forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he gets a bad rap. And Sanchez, obviously his absence was a big deal, and
yep.
and he missed form for a while as well. When he is going, he is very, very strong. As to the Spurs angle, I think they just ran out of gas. I think they were gunning for a title, pun intended, and once they missed that goal, but they knew they were going to be in the top four, Pochettino said they were on vacation, is how he phrased it in the 5-1 loss to Newcastle.
Yeah.
Now, you should never lose to Newcastle 5-1 when they're already relegated.
Yeah.
But I don't think, as annoying as it will be for Spurs fans to hear from Arsenal fans about another St. Totteringham's Day, I don't think the players cared much at all. And is that a problem, I guess, Ben? I mean, should they consider that a problem, that this fierce rivalry was not maybe given the respect that it deserves in terms of finishing ahead of Arsenal?
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, both are going to be Champions League teams next year. It's not like Tottenham really had anything to play for. You know, is there that big of a difference between second and third place?
Mm-hmm.
No. I think you're going to the same place in 2 years. People probably aren't going to remember. But I want to ask you, is Newcastle's 5-1 win over Tottenham more painful for Newcastle fans, or is it more painful for Tottenham fans?
Well, I think Newcastle fans, it depends on the class of fan. So for someone who is living in Newcastle, it's a reminder that you should be able to get right back up next year.
Uh-huh.
Clubs as big as Newcastle and Aston Villa don't normally go down, and Newcastle has some just incredible talent. If Townsend sticks around, Benitez looks set to stick around. Obviously, he's a managerial talent, not a player. Jonjo Shelvey, Jorginho Wijnaldum, Tim Krul, who wasn't there for most of the year. Even Rob Elliott, his backup, is a Northern Ireland international. Or is he Ireland international? Don't tell them that I mistook that.
I'm sure they're all really thrilled about that. Yeah, they're both sides right now. You can't waffle either way.
I'm not here to waffle. I'm here to pancake. But I just...
Cordy Glenn.
I think it's depressing in that they needed one more result like that and they're up.
Yeah.
I mean, they beat Villa if they beat Villa, they're level on points with Sunderland. You know, if you beat Villa by a few goals, I don't think you would have made up the goal differential. I didn't bother to look because I wanted to punch myself in the face. Let me look that up before we go to break.
For me, that's the most hollow win, a 5-1 win on the last day of the season when you've already been relegated.
Oh, sure, sure.
It was, and I feel some sympathy, you know. It's that's tough. That's a storied club that has to go down and build back up. And, I mean, it would be great if they could keep Benitez just because, and it would be great
because he's a good manager.
He's a good manager.
he's won the European Cup.
And that shows a certain amount of sacrifice, you know, to follow a team down once you're relegated because it is not sexy to be in championship.
No. I've been told, though, by a relatively good friend of mine that those are, relegation when he was growing up in the 70s and 80s, it happened. You didn't expect it to happen to your club, but it was for a big club. It happened because your best player got hurt and you couldn't just, I got this guy from France, you know, in January. And he said those are some of the most fun times. He's a Manchester United fan, so he doesn't have a ton of experience with that. But, you're going to different grounds most times. Like, even if Newcastle doesn't come up next year, they're still going to win the majority of their games.
Yeah.
And you're back to being a power. So it will be interesting to see who sticks around and who takes off. And the guys who take off, a lot of times, if you're a big enough club that can bounce back up, it helps eliminate the dross. Is that the right term? I believe it is.
Sure.
Let's take a break. We're going to be back in a minute. More talk. We'll talk about Jozy Altidore's injury and what it means to the United States men's national team. A few other international notes. And then Brian Paredes will join us to discuss his first week in Buffalo, another FC Buffalo center back who came very close to keeping a clean sheet in the opener. We'll be back in a few minutes on WBNY. Short little break there, Ben.
Yeah.
Short little break,
no,
DK.
No intro music either.
Kramer. No, there's music. You just didn't hear it.
I found it was the wrong one. I was like, no, that's not what I wanted.
He was playing church organ.
Yeah, I picked the wrong one
there. That's what the kid
does, man. I messed it up. I did the thing.
DK, as long as you're here, your first live soccer game on Saturday.
Yeah.
You guys obviously produced it for WBNY right on these airwaves. Mm-hmm. And what were your overall takes? Were you surprised at how often they use their feet?
I didn't. Yeah, I was more surprised at how often the ball was in the air.
Yeah.
So that was surprising for me as a newbie in soccer, but it was enjoyable mostly. You know, it was a mostly enjoyable game, and you guys said it was, you know, that it will get better. So yeah. I'm entertained, and I'm looking forward to being there in the future.
We've been FC Buffalo, Ben. One more quick note before we get on to Jozy Altidore. We've been one of the higher scoring teams in our league. In fact, you could argue that in the playoff under Brendan Murphy, we've played a lot of 4-2 and 3-1 games, and it's unusual for us to get blanked.
Not taking the blame for that, though.
Yeah, probably your fault.
I'm blaming DK right now, too. He's in off-season form.
Yes, truly, truly, truly. He's working on his 2021 NFL mock draft.
I can never win.
So, Ben, Jasmer Volmy Altidore.
Volmy?
Volmy is his middle name. V-O-L-M-Y. Big loss or meh?
At this point, I say meh. However, an in-form Jozy Altidore, I don't really know what that looks like anymore because we haven't seen it in a long time.
He has missed a lot of major tournaments.
But I think an in-form Jozy Altidore is something that Jurgen Klinsmann would want to have on his roster and something that U.S. soccer fans would like to see. It just happens so infrequently that you really just have to stop hoping for it. Or you can hope for it, but you just don't think it's going to happen. And the hamstring thing is tough. That is a chronic hamstring injury. And it was a weird circumstance how it happened. He was stepping up to a PK. And, you know, when you're going up to take a PK, you're not really exerting a ton of strength as opposed to, like, sprinting after a ball like you got hurt the first time before the World
Cup. Unless you're an incredibly aggressive PK taker.
And you might be. I don't know, but he missed it, so he wasn't that aggressive.
No.
But,
well, he got hurt while he was,
right,
you know.
True.
Let's give him some... some love here.
But that was a grade 2 hamstring strain, and that's gonna
6 to 8 weeks.
It wasn't a joke.
No, I know.
it's 6 to 8 weeks. It's gonna cost him Copa America, which, I mean, no, it's not the World Cup or anything like that. He already missed that once. But
at what point, right?
It's a good chance to look at other forwards for the U.S., and the jury's still out on Aaron Johansson. We don't know if he can be an effective U.S. striker. Bobby Wood's given us glimpses, and he's been productive, but has he really done it as a starter, or has he been the guy who comes in the 70th minute and changes the game and, you know, nets really important goals?
What?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think what's really interesting, Ben, is there's almost a mirror image of him, a slightly taller but not as wide guy in Giasis Zardes, who has been played on the wings a lot. But Altidore's 6'1", Zardes is 6'2". He's been playing center forward a bit when Robbie Keane was out for the LA Galaxy. And I think this is a massive opportunity I'm looking it up now. He's 24 years old for Zardes. Mm-hmm. In the Copa America, when a lot of eyes are going to be watching, if he has a good tournament, I mean, I think he's gone. I think somebody takes a chance on him. He's the right age.
Good.
He's the right size. And I think
I'm all for that.
He could be European bound.
With Giasi Zardes, I don't see him as a target striker. I think you want to have a guy who's expected to hold the ball up to have, you know, more than like wooden pegs as feet.
Sure, but can you say that isn't there aren't similarities between that description and Jozy Altidore?
Yeah, I mean Jozy's not the world's doesn't have the world's softest touch either, but Giasi is an adventure sometimes, Nick.
No, I agree.
But there aren't really many other forward options, and I can understand why you would think maybe Giasi's the way to go up top. And frustrating as an American soccer fan, as somebody who's watching a lot of college soccer and a lot of, like, you know, fourth tier soccer and up, to not have a U.S. striker who you can be like, oh man, born and bred, it's this guy. Yeah. You know, we don't have that. It's
well,
terrible.
Bobby Wood recently signing for Hamburg in the top flight, so at least he'll get an opportunity to make an impact in one Bundesliga instead of two Bundesliga. But what's interesting now is you kind of look at this team. And you look at the players who are going to play Puerto Rico, for example. Mm. And I think you look at a lot of wingers who are undersized. You don't look at a lot of guys who are going to fill that role or fill out in their bodies in time for the tournament, whether it be Julian Green or even Geddy and Zelalem. He hasn't been named, obviously. But Bobby Wood, it's a great chance for him. But that's why I think it's a big opportunity for Zardes to stake his claim, because otherwise you're talking about 33-year-old Chris Wondolowski. You're talking about Jordan Morris, who is, personal opinion, not yet ready.
Bring back Alan Gordon.
To be, yeah. Pulisic is a winger, right? Ethan Finley is a winger, even if, and I know you and I, Jerome, is it Kiesewetter, I think is how you say it?
Kiesewetter.
Yeah, there's a lot to be concerned about in the strike corps. I mean, is Clint Dempsey still your best forward?
I mean, for some reason, when you said Clint Dempsey, I was saying Clint Mathis, and I was also thinking, like, maybe that's true.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time, and the United States, I mean, I got to tell you this also, just to swing it back to the FC Buffalo angle, we have a fan of the Mexican national team, you know, who was going to be in town for this tournament. He's going to be calling in a little later. We've got a Costa Rican as well who's represented the team from U15 to U20. And, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, and I'm not trying to talk the guy up, but he's also comes from a CONCACAF Champions League regular club. And I'll say it wrong. Eli Walenze. We'll have to ask him.
Oh, yeah. It's
lots of vowels, J's, and L's there.
Yeah.
So we'll have Costa Rica on tap. I really need a good showing for the United States here. I really need it for my summer in terms of CONCACAF.
Yeah, we've had enough depression, I think, from this side. It'd be great to...
Are you excited for the tournament?
I guess so.
We haven't played in the Copa America in a long time.
Passively excited, I guess.
It is a major tournament. We've pretty much had the World Cup, the Gold Cup, and World Cup qualifying, and that's about it because we haven't had Olympics. The United States hasn't been in the Copa America. So, I don't know. I'm excited because it should be different. There are some different teams you're going to see. You know, Paraguay, Peru, etc.
Nick, I am 10 to 15 times more excited about Euro 2016 than I am about Copa America.
Really?
Yeah.
I am excited for Euro, but And I like the timing of the Euro, but I'm excited for these primetime games in the summer. I want to sit on the porch at Meske and watch a game outside between Colombia and Costa Rica.
Want to do that?
Oh, yeah. I want to sit on. They bring the TV outside.
No. I'm not bashing Meske. I'm bashing the Colombia-Costa Rica.
You wouldn't rather
watch France and Spain or something like that?
No, but I'm telling you, the night is a big thing for me. I love the primetime games here in the United States.
Okay.
And I'm also not normally on shift in the evening.
So this is personal then, is what you're saying.
It is. It's very personal. But in the morning, what I love about being a soccer fan is watching games at 3 p.m., is watching games at 1 p.m., even 10 a.m. And those are cool. And that's what I will like about the Euro. But I like my day is done.
Yeah.
I'm sitting down here with an adult beverage at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock and bring on, let me see what the game of the round is. Brazil, Ecuador to start Group B.
Okay.
You know, bring on Mexico didn't play it. Mexico, Uruguay. There is someone who's going to get bit in that game.
Yeah.
Someone is going to get bit on June 5th between 7 and 9 Eastern. And I will happily 8 and 10 Eastern, even better.
Wow.
That might be a whiskey evening.
Do you think the biting's even better between 8 and 10, 7 and 9?
The biting is definitely going to step up a notch.
Oh, boy.
Suarez is, there's a drink. I will order. This is my plea to you.
I won't.
I will be at, we'll be done with FC Buffalo. It'll be a post game against Detroit on June 5th. It'll be 3 hours after we've left the game. And I will be sitting down. I will order the drink, the Luis Suarez.
Which packs a punch, by the way.
Which does pack a punch. There's like a hot pepper in there, right?
Yeah, it's either habanero. I think it might be habanero.
Yeah. And I will watch Mexico play Uruguay. And I will enjoy it massively.
Do not have two Luis Suarez's drinks, though.
I want to see Godin and Chicharito fight.
I think the same kind of drama will be happening in Euro, but it's just much better players.
Oh, sure.
But
not at night.
No. You could DVR it, turn off your cell phone, and then watch it at night.
Ben, I don't have cable except for NBCSN.
Fair enough, Nick. Fair enough. Let's move on. I guess we're at an impasse.
Argentina-Chile on June 6th,
or Chile,
if you will.
Yeah. I was going to go Sheba on you for
that. We're having chili for dinner tonight, and it's a real problem.
Venison?
My son actually has never pronounced Chile anything other than Chile, which is, you know, proving he'll be a better man than I. I'm excited for that tournament. As for Euros, it is worth talking about because the tournament is coming.
I'm so excited because they're announcing those 20-man provisional rosters now, or 23-man or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Looking through some of those names.
England bringing on Rashford was interesting.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I really like it, and if England and France ever play against each other, I'm not sure when that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the Martial-Rashford thing would kind of be neat.
I'm not sure Rashford's going to see the field. I think they're bringing him on because their strike force is so deep.
Yeah,
you know, you've got a Rooney, you've got a Sturridge.
Because Rooney and Sturridge never get hurt, Nick.
That's a great point. But there are five strikers, and I'm not remembering the other two. Harry Kane, right, and Jamie Vardy.
Yeah,
it's going to take all four of those, or three of those dudes are getting injured to see Rashford for more than 5 minutes.
True.
I mean, but at the same time, I think it's a great call. It harkens back to, was it Sven who called up Theo Walcott when he was 18 just to give him a taste of being a part? And it didn't work out, obviously.
I was gonna say, look how that worked out.
Hopefully it works out a little better. I think the pool's been a bit diluted because of how many teams are in the Euro. So there isn't a group where you're looking at it like, wow, I can't wait to watch every single one of these games. I guess the closest you get to that is Belgium, Italy, Ireland, Sweden, and that Sweden still has Zlatan. Italy and Belgium are fairly loaded with talent. Ireland is going to be in the tournament. And so, no, I mean, they have...
That's the second time you've offended Ireland in
this
show.
No, this is going to be a real problem. Thank goodness we have five Scots on FC Buffalo.
They're all nodding their heads right now.
Those guys are the worst.
We signed on with the right team.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, England versus Wales will be a heck of a game to watch because that'll be amped up. Yeah, I'm excited for
that. How much do you think Aaron Ramsey is probably dreading looking toward that game?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Wales has a very interesting setup this year. And it might be a once-in-a-lifetime generational team.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about him. You're talking about Gareth Bale. Joe Allen is a good enough player.
The Welsh Pirlo.
Yeah, the Welsh
or
Pirlo.
Or is he the Welsh Xavi? I get them all confused.
They've got a lot of just solid players, and Joe Ledley and Ashley Williams, who I like.
The captain.
The captain, yeah. Wayne Hennessy is probably going to start for them in net. So
you just dropped down a pretty big deal there.
No, I know. I realized that when I started thinking about their keepers. But
Andy King, though, coming off a championship.
Mm-hmm. Andy King coming off a championship. They have Sam Vokes, who is kind of coming to his own a bit since from Burnley. So I think they'll be a good team, and I think it'll be a very big challenge. It's more pressure for England than for Wales, because they can't lose to Wales.
That's true. And one reason to root for Wales is they have a player named Jazz Richards.
Jazz Richards, Fulham, right?
I think so.
He's a teenager. He's in the rumor mill all the time. It's a London team. It's either Fulham or QPR. Jazz Richards, his nickname, of course, being Hands. It has to be Hands.
It's clever, Nick. Clever.
Do you have a team you root for in Euro?
Oof. I don't do well with rooting for teams. I know that's such like a objective writer answer,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I don't really care. I just want to watch good soccer. I watch a soccer game, and within 15 minutes, I can tell who I'm rooting for.
Yeah.
And
that happens with me a lot.
Sometimes that changes. Like one game, it'll be France, and the next game when France is playing Belgium, it'll be Belgium. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I sort of have gotten to the point where I can't force myself into rooting for a team because I'll end up rooting for the other team. And I'll have all these internal battles.
I've had those moments a lot now because of having a five-year-old. And we'll sit down to watch a game, and he'll say, who's playing? And in the Premier League, he now knows because it's on our TV. It's pretty much ever-present. But, you know, let's say it wasn't a Copa America game, and I'm going into it, and it's Bolivia and Colombia, and I want Colombia to win. He'll be like, who's playing? I'll be like, Bolivia and Colombia. And I'll watch it for a minute. I'll be like, well, who's wearing yellow? And I'll be like, Colombia. He goes, I want them to win. Which is also a moot point because he loves that they're the coffee makers is their nickname.
Oh.
So Los Cafeteros. I probably said that wrong. But you know who I can ask if I said that wrong?
I don't know.
Brian Paredes, center back for FC Buffalo, the New York native. I'm not even going to attempt the borough, even though he told me yesterday. Mm. Brian, where are you from, man?
From Queens, New York.
Queens.
All
right. Love that. And we were just talking about the Copa America, and you and I were talking the other day about how many problems we're going to have during it because your parents are Mexican and you love El Tri, right?
Yes, I do.
Who's your favorite player?
Probably Andres Guardado. He's
very good.
He's the one that creates.
We've had discussions about that, Brian, on this show, and he was the guy I was worried about during that the Confederations Cup playoff game. I did want to share that if you're comfortable sharing this, you told me a pretty hilarious tidbit about Cuauhtemoc Blanco yesterday. Are you willing to share this story?
Yes, absolutely.
Go for it, man.
So Blanco, he's a governor or a senator in the town that my grandma lived in, which is called Morelos. That's the state. So my first time visiting Mexico in December, my grandma told me that he has dinner at her house every week. It's really funny. It's like, holy, it's like Cuauhtemoc Blanco. He's a legend.
Right.
He's having dinner at my grandma's house. Like, how weird is that, you know?
Yeah, it's super
cool. That's really funny to me. You know, a legend just helping out the community of Mexico and helping out with whatever they need, which is great.
He was an unbelievable player for such a long period of time as well. He's still 43 years old. I just looked it up, but I mean, he played until 2015. I mean, how old? What does that make him? Like, he was 41 when he retired.
41, I think. I think he just quit two years ago. He's 41.
Which is just nuts.
And that's pretty good because he was not mobile at all. Like towards the end, he was almost stationary.
And still effective somehow. In his own way. Brian, obviously those are positive things. It's not great to lose an opener. I know you were frustrated by us. What can you tell us about your first experience though, on the pitch for FC Buffalo on Saturday?
It was a great experience. You know, I've never played in front of that many people. It was about 1,200 people, mm-hmm. something like that. You know, We got to get better, you know. We don't know how we play. We don't know each other's styles. But that's something that's going to come out in this week's training. You know, this week's training, we have to work really hard at communicating, keeping the ball in the midfield, you know. We just got to progress and just perform and just come out with the result, you know.
Brian, how tough was it to play center back this week? Because I feel like I'm not sure exactly what your natural position is, but you're not the world's biggest center back. So what kind of a transition was like that? Was that for you?
You know, not being the biggest center back, you know, I'm really not scared of going into tackles. You know, I've played center back before. I played center back for all of my high school career, which is about 3 or 4 years. I'm really comfortable with the position. I could read the game. You know, my natural position is a defensive midfielder. You know, I love to get the ball. I love to distribute. I like to dictate the game. But, you know, and when the team needs me to step up, I'll step up and play center back, you know.
How was that battle against a guy as big as Rochester's, I think he was either number 9, Isaac Kissy, the big striker that you were up against?
Number 18, yeah. Well, I knew from the beginning that he was this big, strong, experienced. I just knew that I had to keep him in front of me at all times, you know. Don't let him turn on me. All he did was try to distribute players running under him, which is pretty good for me, and my midfielders had to step up and make sure to mark whoever was running under him. But I had to keep him in front of me at all times, you know, just put my body on the line, do whatever it takes for him not to turn and be dangerous.
So what did you think, what have you thought overall of the city? Since you've been here, I mean, I know you're not going to say it's terrible because you're a smart guy, but you've been here now 4 or 5 days. You've been in 2 different parts of town, and I know we've even gone out a little bit. You've grabbed some different things to eat. What's been your experience like? What have you thought? Because you're from the Big Apple, man.
I mean, I'm still getting used to it. You know, everything is driving distance as opposed to New York City, where you could literally just walk to the corner like a local grocery supermarket. But, you know, it's a great city. Scott was telling me the other day that, you know, this city is growing a lot. You know, buildings are being constructed. Jobs are available for people, which is great for the city, you know. So I think I'm going to get assimilated to the city, get used to it, love it, you know, travel. That'd be cool.
Well, we didn't get to talk about this, and it's worth mentioning, you had a pretty gruesome injury at the end of the game. That's when you got to hang out with Scott at a local hospital. But it's not going to affect you too much. I know you're a tough guy. Tell us a little bit about it. What was it like to see your own bone?
So I think it was the 86th minute or something like that. The ball hit my hand really hard at a weird angle, and it just opened up my skin. It was a really deep wound, because I could see my bone, and my finger was gushing blood. But I didn't want to tell the referee, because if I told the referee, I probably would have gotten pulled out. And
right.
I didn't want to get pulled out. I kept playing with the bloody finger until the end of the game, and it was just really gross. you know, seeing your bone isn't probably something you don't want to see. So I went to the hospital, got stitched up. I was with Scott for about 3 hours. We just got to know each other. You know, he's a cool-ass dude. So, you know, I got stitched up, and I'm just for about 14 days.
Oh, Ben's got something to ask you, too, but I just can't imagine seeing Bone and being like, all right, I'm going to keep playing soccer. So that's a pretty tough dude, man.
Yeah.
As somebody who's bled on the field before myself, what did you do to conceal that? You know, because you can't put it on your jersey, because then it becomes real, real obvious. Do you just kind of like let it drip, or what do you do?
Oh my gosh, where are we going?
I honestly just let it drip. You know, the referee. I was just trying to keep my right, because it's on my right thing. It's on my right hand, so I try to keep it away from the referee as much as possible, and just shake off the blood so it wouldn't go on my shirt. Because I know if it went on my shirt, they were probably going to call me out or something like that. You know how referees are strict.
That's
so
smart,
I tried
Brian.
To cover it from the referee or from the sideline referee. he was to my left. So I just covered it. You know, I just ran with my hand hiding behind me.
Brian, what else do we need to know about you besides the fact that you're okay seeing your own bone? If we're just interviewing you, if this was before the season, you know, what would you tell us about, you know, the kind of guy you are, what you like to do, et cetera?
I honestly think I'm an outgoing person. You know, I'm very confident with what I do, which is great for me. You rarely see a sad. I'm rarely sad. You know, when something sad happens, I try to be very positive, be very optimistic, and just move forward. You know, in life, you're going to go through ups and downs, and that's just something that I like about myself. You know, just be optimistic, be positive, like at the bright side and things, you know. Other than that, you know, I'm trying to get a good experience out here, helped the team win, build connections with other people from all over the country, all over the world, different colleges. So, yeah.
Well, let's ask you about your college real quick. I know you and Romario Gusket both went to LIU Brooklyn. You had some pretty big wins. This spring you played tight against the New York Cosmos and Red Bulls. Was it Red Bulls 2 or Red Bulls?
Yeah, Red Bulls 2. Their USL team.
Yes, I mean, you had some pretty fantastic experiences there, and you guys went to the tourney. Just tell us a little bit about, there's a very interesting thing, Ben, this is, I think is going to blow your mind a little bit. Brian's coach, TJ Kostecki, has a very interesting philosophy on how they should communicate during the game. And Brian, if you could try to explain it to us in a simple way, I find it fascinating.
Yeah, so TJ Kostecki, his way of training, of playing actually, is to not communicate, to not ask for the ball when we're attacking. So we're basically mute. Kind of weird for soccer, because in soccer, attacking, you want to ask for the ball. Like, hey, I'm open, or hey, pass me the ball. But TJ's philosophy is to always keep your head on the swivel. You know, always know what's around you, 360. Keep your head at a 360 degrees. You know, look right, look left, look behind you. Always know what you're going to do before you get the ball. You know, make sure no one's behind you. Look up to see if you have space. If you don't have space, but we cannot ask for the ball. Funny story, we were playing Davidson in our preseason last year, and their fans, TJ's daughter goes to Davidson. So TJ's daughter's friends were just amazed at how quiet we were on the field. You know, we ended up winning that game 4-1, which is something pretty cool.
I thought what was going to interesting is you did notice that people will tell you that they notice how quiet the game is. And
yeah,
that does that take a while to get used to? I mean, because obviously you're coming from a high school experience, which is probably fairly noisy and vocal. What are the first training sessions like when you're being told just to look up, you know?
So I remember my freshman year last year, the first day of preseason, we literally walked around the field looking up without a ball, just walking. Walking in circles and squares, looking up, making eye contact with their teammates. When, you know, it was literally no ball, just walking, looking up. Then we had a ball on our feet, still walking and looking up. And then that day after day, we just progressed with jogging and looking up, dribbling and looking up, making eye contact with your teammates. So it was coming into college, it was just really different to me. But as preseason goes by, you get used to, you know, you get used to your teammates, you get used to the style that TJ has.
Did you find that it really helped you develop your awareness as a player? Because, I mean, that's one of the real challenges, right, is like being able to know who's around you, both from defenders and fellow attackers. You know, it's not easy to keep your head on a swivel.
Absolutely. So my freshman year, I played as a defensive midfield, and it helped tremendously, you know, coming into college. I wasn't used to just looking back behind me, keeping my head on the swivel. You know, I usually had defenders telling me to turn or not to turn. So at the college level, you have to be better than that. You have to know what's around you, know your surroundings, and I think that helped me out tremendously. Not only as a midfielder, but as a center back, as a right back, as a left back. You know, so it has helped out a lot.
It must be hard on your keeper, though, because, you know, keepers are basically told to essentially yell as much as possible and communicate and keep everybody organized. Does it apply to him, too, or not?
Yeah, no, that's a key thing. Defending, we're very vocal.
Okay.
Defending, you know, our center backs are very vocal.
Gotcha.
Our keepers are very vocal. We don't speak when we attack, when we ask for the ball, when we're trying to counter. You don't tell your wing or your forward to turn.
Gotcha.
You know, you tell him, look up. You don't tell him to turn, because he's supposed to keep his head on a swivel already. You know, you can't ask for the ball.
Okay, so I think that philosophy is a little less strange now.
Yeah, it feels a little better when you get to that way. So, Brian, I know you got to get off to training tonight, and I appreciate you spending some time with us. Again, is there anything we should have asked you?
No, that's all. I mean, I had fun. You know, this is cool.
It's Paredes in a nutshell. Thank you very much, Ben. We'll see you at training, and appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Ben, one more note before we move on with our day and our evening and our week, and then I'll see you again on Monday. Do you, I was trying to find the right way to ask this, but I'll kind of put it in your court. There was a player from Celtic. I don't know if you read about this. 16-year-old scored with his first touch as a professional player.
Mm.
There is no way he understands what he just did, right?
Nope.
No, he has no way to fathom that.
He might also not think that it's a huge deal, right?
Right, it was just the next step for him.
I mean, you come on as a substitute, and sometimes your first touch is pretty important, you know, and usually you feel bad for those guys because they make a total meal of it, whether it's like a volley or it's like a difficult ball played to them or something like that, and you're like, ooh, you can definitely tell that that guy just came on. So maybe that makes it more of an accomplishment, you know, to, and I didn't see the play, so I don't know how glorious of a goal
it was. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah,
it was running, like, streaking into the 18 through the left side and just pokes it past the keeper. It was a nice goal.
Not easy to do. That's something that we overlook a lot is the roles of substitutes, and that's important to tie back with FC Buffalo because, you know, you are allowed to use 7 substitutes and, you know, 6 field players most of the time, and the role of the substitute when they come in, what kind of a role they're expected to play, and then how effective they are in that role plays a lot into a result, you know, plays a lot into the final 40 minutes of a game. And I know you've heard the story before, but I think substitutes and how they're used are incredibly important.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is not novel.
I find myself when a guy subs into the game, just I often, for whatever reason, think about what that must feel like at that speed, regardless of how many times you've done it. You've just been jogging up and down the end line, right?
Mm, probably cold.
Probably cold. Nervous. And all of a sudden it's like, by the way, most of these dudes have been going for 65 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're in the flow of the game. Here's your first touch.
Your advantage, though, is that you are fresh.
That's
true. You have energy. You're looking to make an impact. You've got pretty clear directions. You know, I don't know. I can look at it from both perspectives.
All right. Well, we'll look at it from a ton of perspectives next week. We'll do 90 minutes. We'll do an hour. No, we won't do an hour and a half. But we'll talk soon.
Ben, stoppage time?
We will go into stoppage time. Thanks for hanging out, Derek Kramer. Thanks for not lighting it on fire.
Oh, hey, no problem. Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
And we will be back for WBNY. We'll be on the air on Monday. And then the Friday after that will be our next radio home game.
May 27th.
Missing you, Ben, but excited to have the 716 Sports guys around.
We are missing you, Ben.
Missing you. It sounds like it should be a song. We should probably go now.
See ya.
Probably is. Is.